within with full faith as the greatest in a class by himself of yogis.
And Krishna begins
chapter 7 without even having been asked by Arjuna. He begins speaking of how one can actually know him in full, free from doubt, by practicing yoga in full consciousness of him with mind attached to Maya, Maya Shakta Mana Partha Yogi Nirinja Manasika. The second verse, I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. Phenomenal means of the material world, and numinous means of the spiritual world, the matter and spirit. I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. Purport. Complete knowledge includes knowledge of the phenomenal world, the spirit behind it, and the source of both of them. This is transcendental knowledge. So Krishna is going to explain this transcendental knowledge completely, all three elements: matter, spirit, and the controller of both. What is the controller of both? Matter and spirit. Krishna. In what form? Of course it is Krishna. Vishnu. You're getting closer.
Not.
You're getting further. Sri Dakshai Vishnu. Paramatma. This Paramatma is the controller of the matter and spirit. He's the controller of the Jiva Shakti and the Maya Shakti. Now, this knowledge, jnanam means to know the soul, because it's jnanam teham savvijnanam, and the acharyas have also mentioned, in addition to what Prabhupada said, jnanam meaning material knowledge or phenomenal knowledge, and vijnanam meaning spiritual. Jnanam also means knowledge that has Krishna as its object. Knowledge of Krishna and his energies, that's jnanam. Or knowledge of the soul as part of Krishna. And Ramanujacharya says that vijnan means knowledge of Krishna's form. So this is actually real knowledge. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Now Krishna is going to explain more here in the purport. It is not possible for the Brahman realized impersonalist or the Paramatma realized yogi to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the son of Mother Yasoda or the charioteer of Arjuna. Even the great demigods are sometimes confused about Krishna. Muyanti yat suraya mam tu veda nakastana. Mam tu veda nakastana, that's from the 29th verse, 26th verse of this chapter. Krishna here says how rare it is that someone actually comes to the point of devotional service. And there's, in this chapter alone, Krishna is going to say the same point twice. In text 19, he will say, Sumahatma Sudulava, that such a Mahatma who actually has knowledge and who surrenders to me, Sumahatma Sudulava, he is very rare. And in the 26th verse, he says also, this Mam Tu Veda Nakastana, that he knows all living entities, but no one knows him. This is Krishna's position. Because, as we said, that knowledge about the soul proceeds from the mode of goodness. Naturally, one in the mode of goodness naturally understands that he is not his body, but he feels himself different from his body. He knows himself a soul. But knowledge about Krishna, that Krishna is the, as Prabhupada is saying, the charioteer of Arjuna, how this is the Lord, or how Krishna is the son of Mother Yasoda, not to Veda Kastana, that no one has this knowledge because it is beyond the three modes of material nature. Doing nothing, there's nothing that one can do within this material world that can bring him to the platform of understanding Krishna. That knowledge is descending knowledge. It comes into the material world by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of the devotees of Krishna. And when we hear that, it pierces our heart. Yeah? It pierces, goes right in our heart. It is transcendental knowledge. So it is so rare that one actually, this is why it's rare. Even someone endeavoring for perfection, it is so rare. And someone achieving perfection, it is so rare that he knows about Krishna. Because as far as perfection is concerned, it means being freed from the modes of material nature. It means liberation. So out of those who are liberated, who have a liberation is basically a negative concept. Why is liberation a negative concept? It is like someone who is in the prison house. And what is he thinking? He's thinking that I want to get out. I want to get out. I want to be free from the bars. I want to get free from these guards who wake me up early in the morning and tell me, they turn out the lights and they feed me horrible prison food and they say, now it's time to now you do this and now I have to get out. I want to become free. So the concept of what is good for a prisoner is simply getting out of prison, liberated from the bars of prison. So similarly, the concept of perfection for someone in the material world is to become liberated from the ropes or the shackles of material life, the three modes of material nature. But when one gets out of the prison, then he has a whole life of free activity. And so many choices and so many glorious things one can do when one is free. So far beyond liberation. When the person is out of the prison, he no longer thinks about becoming liberated. There's so many things to do. So similarly, one in spiritual life doesn't think about liberation. Liberation is the concept for those within the prison house of the material world, and therefore they long for Brahman even, that form of liberation, which is free from all the difficulties of the material world. But no one, even out of those who are liberated, without hearing through the disciplic succession, without hearing from the great acharyas, can understand about Krishna. He is inconceivable. Even Lord Brahma, when he saw Krishna standing there with his friends with some food, some yogurt and rice and some fruit, holding it in his left hand. Now, the first thing that we learn when we come to the temple is we shouldn't put food in our left hand, we should eat with our right hand. So here was this uncultured little village boy, a typical Brijbasi, right, holding food in the wrong hand, talking all the time, right, thinking that he knows everything. So he's so there he was, and Brahma, how could Brahma, even Brahma couldn't understand this little boy playing with his friends, herding the cow, was the Supreme Personality. How is it possible that universes are coming from him, that he is the Param Ishwar, the Supreme Controller? How is it possible that this little boy with the fruit in the wrong hand is the Supreme? Inconceivable. So he tested Krishna. And his conclusion, after he took away the cows and the boys, and he came back so quickly because he was a little bit frightened, he knew he was playing with the all-powerful one. He wasn't sure, but he was a little frightened of that. So he came back, and Krishna started all the boys and cows who he had expanded into. They started showing Vishnu forms and unlimited opulence. So Krishna was showing Brahma that unlimited Vishnus even come from my transcendental form. So it is an inconceivable, it is a chinta, guna rupam, govindam, aripurusham, tamaham, dham. He has unlimited, inconceivable potency is within that form. Unlimited, inconceivable potency. Sparkling like a blue sapphire, effulgent with dhoti like the bolt of a lightning, of lightning. With a smile so enchanting and playing his flute, or with his flute tucked in his belt like that. Unlimited potency, hundreds and thousands of Vishnus coming. What to speak of universes coming from the expansion of his expansion of his expansion of his expansion of his expansion, universes emanating, and there he is. So this is Natu Veda Kaschana, that no one can know Krishna. He is inconceivable. Therefore, because no one can know Krishna, and he's saying here how difficult it is to know him, Manushyanam Sahasreshu, Kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siramam kastim mam veti tatvata. That even out of those who have achieved perfection, it is very difficult to know me tatvata in truth. Then how will anyone know Krishna is now going to tell Arjuna this very knowledge which is so difficult? Manushyanam sahasresu. Out of so many thousands, Krishna is yet going to reveal this knowledge to Arjuna and tell about his own potency and his own power. So no one knows me as I am, the Lord says. And if one does know him, then sa mahatma sudolabha. Such a great soul is very rare. Therefore, unless one practices devotional service to the Lord, one cannot know Krishna as he is, tatvata. Even though one is a great scholar or philosopher, only the pure devotees can know something of the inconceivable transcendental qualities in Krishna, in the cause of all causes, in his omnipotence and opulence, and in his wealth, fame, strength, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, because Krishna is benevolently inclined to his devotee. This is inherently why bhakti is superior. I think this, where did we read that? Krishna explained, or Prabhupada explained in the purport about the turtle, the tortoise, the bird, and the fish. Through meditation, by touch, and through sight, do they bring up their offspring. So Krishna says, similarly, do I take care of my devotees? So it is the benevolence, the mercy, and the kindness of Krishna that makes bhakti superior, a descending path.
5.26.
Huh?
5.26.
The last, next to last verse? Or last verse in the fifth chapter?
Fifth chapter.
Fifth chapter, 26 verse. 29 verses in that chapter, so the third verse. So because Krishna is benevolently inclined to his devotees, that is how we can know him. So his mercy comes in so many different forms. His benevolence comes in the form of his devotees. And the devotees are actually empowered by Krishna to give mercy. This is their business, to travel and to be merciful to Krishna's Kripa Shakti. His actual potency of mercy is exhibited through the devotees. Because Krishna does not show favoritism. He is Samoham Savabhuteshu. He is equal to all. But the Madhyam devotee He makes discriminations, so He, out of His mercy, awards devotional service. So He carries Krishna's Kripa Shakti. Therefore, He is the last word in Brahman realization, and the devotees alone can realize Him as He is. Therefore, it is said, Ataksi Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Grayam Indiyai Sevan Mukhi Jivado Swayam Evas Poratyada. No one can understand Krishna as He is by the blunt material senses, but He reveals Himself to His devotees. Why? Being pleased with them for their transcendental loving service unto Him. From Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So, the devotees, or no one actually, no one can give Krishna anything. He is surrounded by hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis and Gopis. What can we give Him? We can give Him a diamond this big. He has unlimited diamonds this big. Unlimited. Can we give Him gold? Can we give Him food? Can we give Him land? What is it that Krishna needs? When we're full, after our meal, someone gives us something to eat and we don't even want it. We don't appreciate it. So Krishna is always full. He is the supreme Atmaram. He is always full. He needs nothing. So what is it possible for us to give Him that will satisfy Him and turn Him towards us? And that is only if we just do something sincerely with love. Bhaktya paritam asnami paritatmana. If we offer Krishna something with bhakti, then asnami, I take it. I accept it, Krishna says. And what does He want? He doesn't want anything, but even if it's a leaf, a fruit, one piece of fruit, it's in the singular, as we'll hear. Patram, pushpam, palam, toyam. If we offer Him one leaf, one fruit, some water, but with devotion, asnami. I take it, I will accept it. And if we have no devotion or sincere desire to please Him, without any desire for our own personal selfish interests, if we don't have any devotion, then Krishna has no appetite for our leaf and fruit and flower and water. There is that famous story from the Mahabharata. You know it? Huh? I didn't give you very many hints. Which one, right? Huh? About who? Durvasa Muni. Yes, but no. That is a very famous story, but it's not the one I'm thinking of. You also want to guess? Vidura. When Krishna went to see Vidura, Vidura's wife, who was a devotee, Krishna just came and she didn't have anything to give him, to feed him, but she was so happy and ecstatic that Krishna had come that she was. She got some bananas and she was peeling them and throwing away the banana and offering the peel. She was eating the peels, thinking how wonderful, because she was offering with devotion. And there was also a story in the Ramayana how someone who was cursed, and she would be free from the curse when Ram came to the forest. So she came and she wanted to offer Ram some fruit. I think there was only some bear fruit or some fruit. You know this one? So she was making sure that they were good. So she was biting them first, taking a bite out first before giving them to Ram, just to make sure they were sweet and tasty. And Ram was eating them and appreciating them because she was offering them with love. So because when the Lord is pleased with the devotees for their transcendental loving service, then He reveals Himself. Sevan Mukhi Swayam Eva Sporatyada. Sporat means He manifests Himself. Now Krishna will begin to describe Himself after describing how rare it was, he will begin to describe himself in a way that we can understand very easily. This verse is also required. Bumira po nolo vayu kam mano buddha evacha ahankara ityame vina prakritir astada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Altogether, these eight constitute my separated material energies. So it is, these are Krishna's Bina Prakriti Astada. These eight Astadas, eight Bina means separated, Prakriti, his material energy, his energy. These eight are his separated material energy, the external energy, the Upadan Karan of Maya Shakti, of his Maya Shakti. These are separated because Krishna empowers the material energy, and then they move in, it moves independently by that power. So it is Bina Prakriti. It is not really Bina. Nothing is really separated from Krishna. But it acts as if separated from Krishna. So this, because remember, in the last verse of the sixth chapter, Krishna is explaining Madgiten Antaratmanam is the best yogi, how to see Krishna. I'm the one who's always thinking of Krishna. So the question is, how can one see Krishna? And here is one answer. There will be quite a few answers. Here is one answer, that we can see Krishna, or anyone can see Krishna. Even if he is the biggest materialist, he can see Krishna, because if he's a materialist, he will see only matter. He will see Bhumir. He will see Vayu. Will he see Vayu?
Feel.
Huh?
Feel Vayu.
Yes, he will feel Vayu when he's sitting under the fan. He will wish he will feel more Vayu, possibly. But everyone, every materialist can experience these things. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ahankar. And we should, just by knowing that these have no separate existence, by seeing earth as Krishna's Bina Prakriti, his material energy, the air that is blowing on us, we feel that. Oh, that is Krishna's Bina Prakriti. The water that we drink and that we bathe with and that we see and we comes raining down upon us, Krishna's Bina Prakriti. And you take these first five, the gross material elements, and each of those has a subtle element of the senses. Earth has smell, water has taste, fire has form, air has touch, and ether has sound. So all these, the gross elements and the subtle elements, they're all coming from each other like that. So everywhere we hear something, we hear the birds. There was that, remember last week, there was that one bird who was coming every day. He was given up this week. But the parrots, we can hear them out there. So that sound is coming through the ether. So this is Krishna's separated material energy. So therefore, anywhere one looks or perceives with any of his senses, he can see Krishna's energy and be fully Krishna conscious. Then the next verse, also an important verse. Aparyayam itastvanyam prakritim bidimei param jiva bhuta mahabaho yeye dam daryate jagat. Beside these aparyayam, because this is apara, or inferior energy. Aparyayam idastvanyam, there is another. Beside this inferior energy, There is another Prakriti. You should know this Prakriti. You just try to understand this other Prakriti. Vidime Prakriti Vidime Param. Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho. O Mahabaho, O Arjuna. This is the jivas, the spirit souls. The living entities. They are not apara. Yeye dam daryate jagat. And what are they doing? What they are doing is they are daryate means exploiting this jagat, this material world. So everything, as Krishna is going to explain in the next verse, all created beings have their source in these two natures. There is the jivas, the living entity, and then there is the material, the apara prakriti, the bina prakriti, bhumi, rapo, nalo, vayu, kamano, buddha, evachar. So there is the jivas and there is the material energy. And all that we see, whatever form it is in, whether it's in the form of a table, or a book, or a microphone, or a tree, or the green parrots, or the bell ringing, or the chitais, the curtains, or these curtains, or the blue walls, or the clock slowly turning and turning and turning, or the fan quickly turning and turning and turning. All this is simply a combination of this Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. That this Jiva Bhuta, which is eternal, that will be explained later, but this Jiva Bhuta, the spiritual energy, the living entities, combined with the material energy. This is all that you see in existence. And these two, this Bina Prakriti and this Jiva Bhuta, these two are just simply the energies of Krishna. So everywhere one looks, he will see nothing but the combination of these two energies of the Lord. Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta Kshetragya Kya Tatapara Avigya Kama Sangyanya Tritya Shakti Ishyate. From Padma Purana, the Vishnu Shakti, there are three different energies of the Lord. There is Vishnu Shakti, and then there is, in addition, Kshetragya, the living entity, Tatapara. He is also the superior energy of the Lord. Knower of the field, what chapter will this be explained in?
13.
So the 13th chapter will explain this field of activities, everything that we see before us as the two energies of the Lord, the Maya Shakti and the Jiva Shakti and the other superior energy, the internal energy. This will be explained in detail in the 13th chapter. But for now, Krishna just is explaining to us how we can see Him everywhere and always meditate on Him. Because before our vision, before our ears, and our sense of smell, and our sense of touch, and our sense of taste, there is only the combination of these two energies of Krishna. There is nothing else in existence. And this Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho Yaya Dam Daryate Jagat, this is the business of this jiva, the spiritual energy in Maya. He is exploiting this material world. He is trying his best to squeeze pleasure from this material world. But he is not of the material world because he is Jiva Bhuta. He is a spiritual energy, but due to this ahankar and due to his desire to exploit the material energy, he is identifying with the material energy, with the Bina Prakriti. But he is not apara shakti. He is para shakti. Kshetragya tatapara. He is para shakti. He is not apara. He is not bina prakriti. He is not the material energy. He is spiritual energy. But he is identifying with the material energy. Why? Because he has the desire to enjoy. Born from the motive passion. He wants to enjoy. And therefore he's exploiting the material energy, or trying his best to exploit it. So all created beings have their source in these two natures. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both the origin and dissolution. So Krishna here has explained something else too, that that he is the origin, the dissolution, and the maintenance of the material world. It is through him that the material world is created, by his energy. He empowers Brahma. And then it is maintained by Vishnu. He himself takes the form of Vishnu. And then it is destroyed by his energy in the form of Rudra or Lord Shiva. So this is also how we can see Krishna everywhere. Madhyatena antaratmanam. If one has knowledge, this is how to see with knowledge. Because when a person without knowledge sees a rose, he will see it in one way. But when a person who has knowledge sees a rose, he will see this is a combination of earth, water, fire, air, ether, plus the jiva bhuta, the living entity. Without that living entity in there, that this rose bush will not grow and this glorious rose will not come out. And we see in the winter when we plant rose bushes out, the soul leaves the rose bushes and the bush dies and no rose will come out. Without that combination of the jiva and the inferior energy, there is no working of the material energy, because the material energy in of itself is dead. So Krishna is the creator, the maintainer, and the dissolver of the material world. So everything that we see is either in a state of being created. The rose is in the bud form, it is being created, or it's opened up, blooming and existing, and then it is starting to shrivel, it is dissolving. So this is also Krishna's energy.
When seeing the manifestation of the material world, we see the material nature and the jiva buddha, but can't we also see paramatma?
But when we see that, we see that there's the material energy, and then we see the spiritual energy, then we refer back to this verse, that these are energies, these are shaktis. So that means there is the source of the energy, and that is Paramatma. So first we see that these two, there is nothing but in existence but these two energies, and then we understand the source of the energy, and that will bring us to Krishna. This is how to see with knowledge, through the intelligence. Yeah.
Is it correct to say that all these energies are personal, impersonal, the whole creation is the origin, is personal?
Yes, because we don't say it is impersonal, because it's Krishna's energy. If without knowledge, when we look at the shoe, we just see impersonal shoe. But if I know these are Sankirtan Das's shoes, there's no impersonality in it whatsoever. So with knowledge, we see like that. But yet, in and of itself, there is no personality in the material energy. We can say that Durga is controlling it as Krishna's agent like that, but it is basically dead and lifeless in and of itself.
See, in order to
say, tell
someone that everything is controlled, that they move to the energy, pointing out the energy itself is personal.
I'm not following the point.
You show someone that every move of the living entity, every movement is controlled.
The living entity is individual. He's a person. But he's an individual.
Person engaged in the material world, is every act is controlled.
But that's a different point.
That is not. Man not say that it's right, because the energies are personal, and therefore.
But the living entity, he is not He is a different energy than the controller of the living entity. Because the controller of the living entity, of course, ultimately is Krishna, but he's controlling the living entity through the Maya Shakti, through the three modes of material nature. So if you make that point to show that everything is personal, then it confuses the living entity with the sounded to me like it confuses the living entity with the material controller of the living entity. So I'm not sure how that means anything to you. When we say that everything is personal, what do we mean? That everything has a connection with Krishna, who is the Supreme Person. So even we who are persons, we are persons, but still we have a connection with the Supreme Person.
But don't we also say that there is a personality in charge of each element? Like Vayu, the God, is in charge of the water element. And that's the main God, of course. The Varuna is in charge of the water, or Indra. And in this way it's personalized.
But we also say that it is dead matter, that it is lifeless.
But I have the explanation that this we say, but actually it's Krishna's energy just covers with ignorance.
What is Krishna's energy covers with ignorance?
Like there's only, just like this verse that you call the Vishnu Shakti Parabhutta, this is that there's only one energy.
It doesn't say there's one energy. Vishnu Shakti Parabhutta, it says Chitya Shakti Isha, there are three.
Yeah, but I saw one translation of that verse by Sri Brahma where he translated there's one energy, but for our understanding we categorize it into three.
No, he never says there's one energy. Sometimes he says there's unlimited energies, but we categorize them as three, but never there is one energy. I've never seen that anyway. Has anyone ever seen that? I've seen it saying there are unlimited energies and we categorize them into three, because in the spiritual energy, the Chit Shakti or Vishnu Shakti, there's Ladini Sambit Sandini. And for the Maya Shakti, there's Upadan Nimittik, there's mode of passion, mode of goodness, mode of ignorance, there's Bhumirapanala, there's so many characterizations.
Yeah, but
so I've heard it said that Prabhupada's saying there's unlimited energies and we categorize it to three, but I've never heard him say there's one energy. I've never heard that.
You never seen
him
say that.
Huh?
One energy.
Ah. There's one source of energy.
Didn't you say that?
No, we don't say that. Because it's not true. Because everything doesn't emanate from Radharani. Why do I have to prove that everything doesn't emanate from Radharani? Why don't you prove that everything does emanate from Radharani? You could. Okay, good.
Not
now. Post-dated blank check. Too much scientific training for you. No, actually, everything doesn't emanate from Radharani. You can say everything emanates from Balaram. That you can say, ultimately. Because from Balaram comes Mahashankarshan, from Mahashankarshan, another Shankarshan, and then the Chatavyuha. And then from the Shankarshan of the Chatavyuha comes Karanadakshay Vishnu, then Garbhadakshay Vishnu, then Chiradakshay Vishnu. And from Chiradakshay Vishnu, he is the controller of these other two energies. So you can't say, but not Radharani. She is Ladini.
In one sense also, it's not completely faulty, because Durgas are too, like the God, are too precise, and they all know that this was going on.
I'm
going
to get caught here. Usually, yes, yeah, Radharani, Lakshmis than in the material world, Durga. You probably could prove it in that way, but I'm not sure that way how to go. Any other questions? Okay, next verse. So the next verse, mata paratanam na anyat kinchid asti dhananjaya mai savamidam protam sutre maniganaiva. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. So Krishna is explaining again, he's tying up his points here, how he can be seen everywhere as the source of matter and spirit, knowing that everything rests upon him. There is no truth superior to him. And just like pearls are strung on a thread. So this is a very nice example, how pearls are strung on a thread. When we look at the material world, we don't see Krishna. We see matter, and we see spirit moving, but we don't see Krishna. Just like when we look at a string of pearls or neck beads, what do we see? We see the beads, we don't see the thread. But without the thread, there would be no question of there being neck beads or a string of pearls. So similarly, although when we look at the material world, we don't see Krishna, that everything is simply resting upon Krishna, like pearls are strung on a thread. And as we don't see the thread, we just see the pearls. Similarly, we may not see Krishna unless we have knowledge. We don't see Krishna. We just see the material, these two, the internal energy and the external energy. We don't see Krishna. But yet, it is Krishna that is holding everything together and maintaining. So this verse is a very sweet and nice verse. How Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and there is no truth superior to Him. Mata paratanam nanya kinsir asti dhananjaya. Beyond me, mata paratanam, superior, na anyat, kinship. There is nothing else beyond me superior. So what does this do to the Mayavad philosophy, saying here is Krishna, and beyond Krishna is Brahman, the Supreme? What does this do? Krishna is saying there is nothing superior to Him. There is nothing beyond Him. There is nothing. He is the last word. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Sabhiti. Bhagavan, Krishna, is the last word in spiritual realization. So this verse, in and of itself, defeats impersonal, those philosophers who say that the impersonal Brahman is the Supreme. Matta parataram na anya kinchirasti. There is nothing beyond me. There is nothing. Now Krishna, so after explaining how to see Him through His energies, Krishna will now begin to explain how to see Him in different ways as the essence of all. Any questions or comments? I get we got most of the questions.
I have a question about the shlokas.
Which ones to memorize? Yes.
Yesterday you mentioned that knowledge, transcendental knowledge, that was explained before, was removed to goodness. And this knowledge that we didn't explain now is
beyond the mode.
Yeah, beyond the mode of goodness, chit shakti.
Yeah.
I wonder with there's a relation between this categories of knowledge, because this, the other is not a vidya, it's knowledge also.
It is, yeah. It is vidya. Yeah. But vidya is born of the mode of goodness, and therefore in and of itself, it does not give liberation. It brings one to the door of liberation. So, vidya is a product of maya. also, and avidya is also a product of Maya, but vidya is also in the realm of Maya, because it is born of the mode of goodness. Okay, yes, last question.
Question on the doership.
On what?
On who is the doer?
Who is the doer?
Here we have in chapter 3, once we learn that the soul is the highest senses in the mind of intelligence. And the purpose of all this is the soul is the most of intelligence and mind. So that the soul or the conscious enters there into the material elements.
The what?
Enters there into the material elements.
The soul.
The soul is pure consciousness.
Yeah.
You understand the soul. Once I understand that the emotions are moving, that the soul is just desired and it's enacted by the super soul. But here it seems also that the soul in itself is mastering the intelligence.
It's supposed to be mastering. If it is lined up properly, the soul should control the intelligence should control the mind should control the senses. No. But it should control it. It doesn't interact, and it does. It is actually the interaction between the spirit soul and the material elements is controlled by Maya Shakti, and it's inconceivable. So it doesn't interact, but yet you can't say it has nothing to do with it, but actually it doesn't have anything to do with it. But it's all in this very subtle realm of ahankara, false ego, that this connection, it is the junction box between matter and spirit. There is an identification that is the most subtle.
The way to explain it would be just a chariot, and the peasant has just a small voice to say something to the driver.
It depends who you're explaining it to. So that question doesn't usually come up. What is, how is the soul, how does it interact with matter at all? Because it is like the water and the coloring in the water. There is no connection between the water and the coloring. The water is clear and the coloring is a completely separate entity than the water. The water never becomes muddy or anything like that. Water is never impure because you can extract it out again. When the sun comes and puts down its rays, then the water leaves and the coloring or the mud is left behind. So the water never has become impure. Yet, when you look at them together, how do you differentiate between the mud and the water or the green color and the water when it's all mixed up? Practically speaking, you can't.
Can I have some of the oil and water?
Example. At least it's a different example.
It's not mixed at all.
Huh?
The oil would keep it separate, more separate. That never mixes with water at all.
Right. Who gave you that example?
I'm not sure if it's my own.
So it's a good, if you want to show how it doesn't mix, then you can use that one. But if you want to show that it's really inconceivable, which it is, then the other one is more appropriate. There is an inconceivable relationship between matter and spirit, which is the ahankar, which is by the mercy of Maya Shakti, the glue of Maya Shakti. See, if you use the example of the oil and the water, then it would be very easy to separate, right? Maya, the jiva from the Maya. But you try and you see how easy it is to separate, to get out of Maya. It's very difficult. Practically, we can only get out by the mercy of Krishna. There is no other way. No matter what yoga we are practicing, even if we want to go to Brahman, we still need the mercy of Krishna to become liberated to go to Brahman. Because, of course, Brahman has no quality, so it cannot give any mercy. If it was merciful and could hear your prayers and respond to your prayers, then it wouldn't be Brahman. So the Brahmavadis even must pray to Krishna to get liberated. And then by the mercy of Krishna, he allows them liberation.
Okay. Thank you. Lord,